You are listening to an American Free Press podcast. Joining me on the line is Taja Savelle of Urban Farming, an international nonprofit organization headquartered in Detroit, Michigan. Urban Farming's mission is to create an abundance of food for people in need by planting gardens on unused land and space, while increasing diversity, educating youth, adults, and seniors, and providing an environmentally sustainable system to uplift communities. Taja, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Taja, what exactly is Urban Farming, your organization? What does it do? I know I read the mission statement, but what do you guys do?
What we do is we plant food on unused land and space, and we give it to people in need. We started in Detroit, Michigan with 3 gardens, and as I mentioned before, we have the equivalent of over 800 gardens across the country and abroad, and it's really that simple. We plant food on unused land and space, and we like to say space. We remind people that it's a space as well as land. The reason we do that is because we also plant on rooftops and we plant on walls. So we have edible walls, which are a part of the urban farming food chain. Edible walls are literally gardens on the wall. They're really pretty cool because not only do they look beautiful, but they help to heat the host building that they are on. So if you put an edible wall, for instance, on one side of your house, you can cut down on close to 60% of your heating and cooling costs of your building. If you put an edible wall all around the house, you'd really be cutting down. They not only cut down on your heating and cooling costs, but they cut down on the urban heat index and they reduce the rainwater runoff within a city or really wherever they are. But cities have problems with rainwater runoff. So these edible wells have many wonderful benefits, and our twist is that they also help to feed the community.
That's amazing. Now, you didn't start in this industry, did you?
No, I did not. When I was a teenager, I wanted to be a botanist, and for a couple of years, for about 3 years, I lived on a farm. But I really, in one day, decided that I wanted to become a recording artist when I was 15. And singing is something that I've done all my life. But I really was not on that trajectory. I was really very, very resolved to become a botanist, and I had 150 houseplants in my bedroom, and I knew all of the scientific names of those plants and household names and how to take care of them, and that was really what I wanted to do. But singing is a passion of mine, and I decided overnight that a friend of mine said, "Wow, you have a great voice, you should be a singer." And yeah, I had never thought about the idea of being a singer, and I decided right then and there I was going to be a singer, and I ended up getting a recording deal with Prince, and that's what launched my career.
And you're from the same city as Prince, is that right?
Yes, I'm from Minneapolis, yes.
Okay. That's amazing stuff about the edible walls. Now, what turned me on to this story was an article I read about Detroit and their foreclosures. And this was back in 2008. Farms take root in Detroit's foreclosures because there's so many foreclosures in Detroit. At least at the time this article was put out, Detroit was the number one city for foreclosures in the country. Tell our listeners about that whole thing. I haven't been to Detroit in over 10 years, but what is it like now?
You know, I remember that article. That was our project that we did with the Wayne County Treasurer, and they gave us 20 lots of land to put gardens on. They didn't give us the land. They let us put gardens on that land. What's happening is, with all of the job loss in Detroit, the city has diminished, and there's quite a bit of unused land in the city. There are over 17,000 acres of unused land in the city of Detroit. So the onus is on the city to mow that land. It really becomes somewhat of a financial burden as well as an eyesore and things like that. So putting a garden on the land is a great win-win situation, particularly with urban farming. And the reason is because we're a movable feast, and we like to work with cities. We like to find out what their city plan is. We will move whenever they want us to. And we're very much into global investment and job creation, business growth, and working with cities on strategies to help make those things happen within a city, particularly a city that's distressed.
Now, you only started in 2005, is that right?
2005, I started it with a pamphlet and $5,000 and 3 gardens. And, you know, really, it was an idea. And I had actually seen a news story about the mayor at the time of Curitiba in Brazil. His name was Jamie Lerner. And he had done such amazing things with that city with really not a lot of money. And the story talked about how he did it. And one of the questions was, how did you do all of this so quickly? And one of the parts of his answer was that he just started doing it. When I started urban farming, that's what I decided to do as well. Let's just get started. Let's get moving. And we were able to expand in 2006, which was our second growing season into New York, Los Angeles, St. Louis, and in my hometown, Minneapolis. So by the second year, we were in, you know, a few more cities, and we became adopted by Atlantic Records, which really that particular blessing had nothing to do with my connection to the music business. It was really a blessing from above, and we took off from there. The vision has always been global, and it continues to be global, and we are in nearly half the United States at this point. But we do have a garden in Jamaica, and we do have a participating farm and garden / orchard in Canada. We have a garden in England. You know, we don't want to grow too quickly, but we want to continue to grow as quickly as we can.
Well, it worked in the United States. It seems like you could take that same formula overseas and do the same exact thing. Why not, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, at that point, too, when we really get overseas more, you know, there are some wonderful people that are doing things overseas. Their goal is not necessarily to get rid of hunger, but on a broader level to get rid of poverty, which is really sort of talking about the same thing, because from the urban farming perspective, the quickest way to see an end to hunger is to create jobs.
Right. Now, I guess the most impressive thing about your organization, about you and your organization, because pretty much you are the organization, you started it, is that I'm looking at Wikipedia, and it says that you've produced enough food to feed over an estimated 480,000 people. Is that correct?
Yes. I don't think the numbers are in for this year yet, so we're still counting. This year, we did a wonderful project with Kraft Foods and the Triscuit Cracker called the Home Farming Movement, and we planted 50 gardens in 20 cities across the United States with them in that project. We opened up in a lot of new cities, particularly in some of the southern cities where, you know, the numbers just keep coming in because the gardens keep on going. Obviously, in the winter states, the gardens are shut down for the winter unless we're able to put hoop tunnels or hoop houses up, in which case we can extend the growing season. But for those southern cities, you know, the numbers of food, it just keeps coming in.
480,000. What you started in 2005 now feeds over 500,000 people.
Yep, that's the, been a lot of work. I haven't done much sleeping since 2005.
I mean, you've thought about that figure, of course, haven't you?
I have. You know, it's funny because I'm sure anybody that's listening that started something from scratch, it's hard to look back and, you know, you kind of just have to keep going forward, and it's fast and furious and hard work. And so sometimes it's hard to sit back and look at what, you know, has already been accomplished. And one of my favorite places to be is out on the gardens, you know, especially in areas that really need it. But no matter where I am, it's wonderful. But, you know, we've had people coming up to us crying and thanking us, you know, on more than one occasion, several occasions where people literally come up with tears in their eyes and or tears dripping down their faces and letting us know why, you know, these gardens are so important to them. One thing that I love about a garden is it really attends to that old adage, give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, give him a fishing pole, you know, he'll eat for the rest of his life. Well, the garden is sort of the fish and the fishing pole. In our case, one of the hallmarks of urban farming, the organization, the nonprofit organization, I always sometimes have to make that clear because it's not the verb, it's not the act of urban farming, it's the organization. And so in our case, one of the hallmarks of urban farming is that our gardens are free. So if you see a garden in the community that's on city-owned land, most of the time it's on city-owned land, the gardens are borderless, and people can walk up to the garden and pick the food 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if somebody is really suffering from, you know, starvation or food insecurity, they have access to food. And a lot of these areas are in food deserts. And food deserts are areas where the community residents do not have access to fresh, wholesome food anywhere near them. And they have to travel well outside of their area in order to get that type of food. And many of the inner cities in the United States are unfortunately set up that way.
Right.
And they do not have access. They don't have the grocery stores. They don't have that access. So they're having to go and try to get some maybe, you know, C or D grade vegetables at a liquor store or a corner store where you just can't get the variety and you can't get the quality. Certainly not organic. So having a garden of fresh, organically grown food that you have access to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week is quite an advantage, and it also beautifies the area. So there are many, many wonderful things that the gardens do for the communities, but in addition to that, the communities can use them as, and we use them as, areas where people can come together, and we do workshops. We do workshops with food nutrition, career training, things like that right beside the garden, dance, opera, all types of things that can also be done beside the garden to galvanize the community.
It's an amazing thing that you've done. I'm shocked over the numbers. I'm shocked that in 5 years you've done this. And what do you project the new numbers will be?
Between 600 and 700, much closer to 1 million, getting closer to that, closer to 750,000 at this point. Our goal is to expand, obviously, every single year. And when I say that we have the equivalent of 800 gardens across the country and abroad, that is based off of a 20 by 20 foot garden size. And just to let you know, a 20 by 20 foot garden size, what we do is we go in and we soil sample, and then we drop 2 semi-trucks of topsoil and compost to create a 20 by 20 foot garden. So we build the garden about 18 inches off the ground, really good rich soil. So that gives you an idea of just how many resources it takes to put in a 20 by 20 foot garden.
Right. I had read that on your website. I was wondering exactly what that meant, and now I know. Now, all of this stuff obviously doesn't come for free, and your website here has a little penny with a, looks like a stalk of corn coming out of it, and it says donate. Tell our listeners about how important it is for the donation part of your enterprise.
You know, I mean, that's critical. You know, I've learned a lot since I started this. I didn't know anything really about this whole world and starting a nonprofit, because I had been writing songs and singing all of my life. But I'm a fast learner, thank God. And really? I've learned a lot. And, you know, having a nonprofit organization, a charitable organization, we rely on donations. So we can't do anything unless people donate. So whether it's a corporation, whether it's an individual, obviously everybody that donates will really greatly appreciate. And, you know, there are a lot of people that there are so many things to donate to in the world. And I think you really have to find the thing that touches your heart, you know, that strikes a chord inside of you. And if you find something that strikes a chord inside of you and you choose to support it, then that's a beautiful thing, because you're helping to give back to, you know, the community, to the world, to make the world a better place. And it sounds a little cliche, but it's true. We've certainly had a wonderful effect on people through planting gardens, and every time we're able to plant a new one, we know that it's going to have a lasting effect, and chances are it may be right in your city.
It's a beautiful thing, and there's nothing like a full stomach, right? I mean, especially for children, and I don't think cliche would apply to any of the stuff you're doing because of that. Now, how important are donations to your organization? What percentage of the total funds come from donations?
Everything is a donation in some sort of a form. And, you know, I'm going to just circle back to something you just said about, you know, a full stomach, and especially with children. You know, when I started doing this in Detroit, one of our gardens was right across the street from a school. And we started talking to the school. And the woman in the school, I think she was the principal that we were speaking to, she gave me a couple of startling facts that I, you know, I just did not know. And first of all, she said that 85% of the students came from families that are living in poverty. She said the students in that school and several other schools that are, you know, dealing with the same types of situations in terms of poverty, they really dread summer vacation. I mean, that blew my mind, because I always remember just, you know, there was a countdown to summer vacation.
Right.
But these young children dread it. And I said, why? And she said, well, the reason why is because the one meal a day, you know, or the meal and the snack that they can rely on is at school. And during the summer, they have no idea where their food is coming from. This was in Detroit, and I soon found out that this is also the case in many other cities in the United States, in the inner cities particularly.
Right.
So it's just a whole other thing going on that I wasn't aware of, and I just thought that was so sad. And
yes.
So I know that the kids were real happy to see that garden right across the street from their school. And, you know, we've seen many, many kids out there with their parents.
That's great.
Picking the food. And for city kids, too, you know, they don't get a chance to get out into the country. And a lot of times they don't know what some of this food is. You know, I've heard comments all the way from, what's that, to the teacher. 17-year-old girl asking a teacher, what's that, pointing to an eggplant. The teacher says, that's an eggplant. And she says, is that where eggs come from?
Oh, boy.
You know, or a little girl pointing to a tomato and saying, look, Mommy, that's what they put on the burger at McDonald's. You know, that's the only time she's seen a tomato. So for her to see how it's grown and what it is and start to learn about the nutritional benefits and things like that, it's really powerful for kids. And they get so excited when they come out to the garden. I see them all the time, particularly on our largest garden in Detroit, which is over a block long. Well, really, that one at this point is about 2 acres collectively.
Wow.
And you see the kids just running around having a great time, and their mothers are picking food. And I mean, it's really something. It's my favorite time. And it also, you know, being in the garden is my favorite part of all this. Also seeing the diversity, you know, what happens when you have diverse groups of people on the garden. That's another trip right there. I mean, it's really interesting because you'll have people of different races and religions and ages and backgrounds and, you know, political beliefs, and they come together in the garden and they're just friends. You know, they just start talking, and for some reason the gardens, you know, really bring people together. Right. So that's another nice piece of it, too. But I didn't mean to get completely off the subject of the donations.
No, please. No, I'm so glad that you brought this up, because it's such a stark reminder of how really off-kilter our country is, has been, and is becoming when you think about all of the trillions of dollars used to bail out these very rich organizations and people, and then right next door you have a child who doesn't even know what an eggplant is.
You know, I think all of us are trying to do what we can in our own way, and, you know, obviously there are many wonderful and positive things about our country, and I love our country, and I think in the world we're advancing inch by inch as mankind and getting better and better every day. Hopefully that's the goal. So that's what you try to do with a country. You try to, you know, fine-tune it as you keep going. And yeah, I've learned a lot starting this organization, you know, because every year that's what we have to do as an organization. We have to take a look at our business model. We have to say, is this working? Is that working? And if it's not, we have to make changes. And, you know, we just try to fine-tune and get better and better every single day, every single year. So I understand that we are a work in progress as a country. I've certainly seen a part of the world that I didn't know about before. There are so many wonderful people in the world of the nonprofit, you know, whether it's in the area of food that I'm in, you know, feeding people, whether it's in other areas. There are many, many people with wonderful, good hearts. And I've had the honor, really, to meet so many of them. And I, coming out of the music business, and music business is a different kind of a business. And, you know, I love music. Music is my passion. It's my first passion. Mm-hmm. And it's also a business. So
you know you're going to have to sing a little at the end of this broadcast, right?
Oh, I didn't know that I signed up for that.
Did you have a particular hit that they played on
the
radio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the first song that I wrote was Love is Contagious, and that was a hit. I wrote the song. I actually produced the demo, but the producer, his name is Bennett, he did a great job on that song, and it became a wonderful hit.
How does it go?
Love is contagious when it's all right. Love is contagious. I didn't get a chance to work out my voice.
Taja, I watched the video on your website, the one where you were a guest on The Ellen Show, and one part of that interview that caught my attention was what you said about gardening during World War II. Please tell our listeners about that.
You know, and I really appreciate that you read our mission statement. And the reason I back up to say that is that our mission is to create an abundance of food for all in our generation. That's another way that we put it. And when we say that, it sounds like it's a lofty mission. But when you consider the victory gardens during World War II and the fact that nearly 20 million Americans planted gardens in their yards and they grew almost half of our nation's produce supply, then you start to realize that that concept is not as lofty as you think. It's really something that has been done. When you think about the fact that they planted that much food during World War II, when there was no internet, really radio use was not as widespread, telephones, we did not have Twitter, you know, we didn't have a lot of the things that we have now to be able to sort of spread the word. It's really quite an amazing fact. And once I found out that they had done that model during World War II, I thought to myself, you know, we can really see an end to hunger in our generation if we all pull together to do this.
Now, on your website, urbanfarming.org, there's several tabs: home, about us, calendar, garden locations, press, media, and you've gotten a lot of press, gallery, volunteer. Tell our listeners about the volunteer tab.
If somebody wants to volunteer with Urban Farming, they can shoot us an email, and if we are established in their city currently, then we can try to connect them with the right person in that city to go out and volunteer in many different ways, whether it's working on a garden, helping to water it, helping to weed it, helping to maybe do some outreach in the community, things like that. So if people are interested in that, they can go onto our website, urbanfarming.org, and check it out. There are a lot of pretty cool things on the website. You can see little stories. We did a small tour earlier this year where a crew from Detroit went out in an RV and planted gardens in 8 or 9 different cities across the United States. So there are little short videos about their tour, and there are plenty of garden pictures, information on our various programs. We have three main programs. One of them is health and wellness, and so we teach about, you know, health and wellness, and we have a wonderful health and wellness chef. His name is Michael Travis, and he loves to prepare really, really delicious food that is healthy for you, and he explains why it's healthy for you. Mm-hmm. We also have a green collar job and entrepreneurship program. It teaches about entrepreneurship and money management. Well, the green collar jobs, it's green collar jobs and environmental justice program. And then we have an entrepreneurship and money management program. Those are the key programs that we have, and we do various workshops and help people to connect with opportunities, give out information. We've done health walks. We've done all kinds of things through those programs throughout the years. And, you know, in the beginning, it was a little tough because we were doing all of this on a shoestring of a budget. I mean, it was really quite something to start it with just
nothing, basically.
With nothing,
you're almost feeding a million people.
Just from an idea. Yeah, just from an idea and 17 hours a day of work. And, you know, a lot of wonderful help, and obviously the donations are the only way that we could keep going. That's the only way.
Right.
If they stop, then we would have to close down. And there have been a couple times when, you know, I really was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I never give up. So, you know, I go through thick and thin, and we've been through some thin, and I know
right.
A lot of people can relate to that, you know, because we've all been going through it in the world.
Absolutely. I'm looking on your website under the supporters, and you have quite a few corporate supporters, Home Depot, Whole Foods, Lowe's, the St. Louis Rams, and
mm-hmm.
individual celebrities, Richard Lewis, the comedian, Ed Begley, the actor, Prince, of course, and various other folks. I would encourage the listeners of this broadcast to go to the website and take a look at all these entities that are supporting urban farming. Of course, that's urbanfarming.org, and you are also on Twitter, MySpace, YouTube, and Facebook, right?
Yes, we are. And, you know, I want to say a special thanks to Richard Lewis. Richard Lewis really got started with us within the first year. He became one of our advisory board members. And I said that our connection with Atlantic Records did not happen through my music business connections. What happened, you know, Richard was a funny story, but it's one of those stories that lets you know that there's something bigger than you helping you,
right.
You know, in the world here. And so anyway, the story goes that Richard was sitting in the lobby of a hotel, and he was, you know, writing some jokes. And Craig Kalman, who's now a board member of ours, he is the CEO of Atlantic Records. He walked up to Richard and said, "Hey, I'm a big fan of yours. You know, how you doing?" And they, you know, struck up a friendship over the next couple of months. And one thing led to another. And Craig said, "Well, you know, what's your wife doing?" And Richard's wife is a great friend of mine. And he said, "Well, she's working on this charity, Urban Farming." And so one thing led to another. And Craig Kalman pretty rapidly got on a conference call with us and made the decision to adopt us, adopt a charity of Atlantic Records. And, you know, a lot of the artists that are on Atlantic Records, particularly starting out with the hip-hop division, got on board and started getting behind and dropping in and doing garden visits and things like that. T.I. has shown a great amount of support, really good-hearted artist, and a lot of Diddy's artists, you know, Day
right.
26, and Young Jock was out there, certainly Richard Lewis, and, you know, always give a lot of love to Prince. He's really shown us a lot of love and been a wonderful help for us as well. We appreciate it when people do that because, you know, it creates so much more awareness when you have artists get behind it, and particularly a variety of artists, because we like to touch everybody's hearts, and we like to say, even though we're called urban farming, we are in the suburbs, we're in rural areas, we like to say urban, rurban, and suburban. Those types of things have been, really, we call them small miracles. Every day we've had some amazing situations like that that I couldn't have planned. I mean, I didn't plan that out. That was a huge blessing that dropped down into our midst. So I do want to mention that. There have been some wonderful supporters, so we're very, very grateful.
As we mentioned, those children with those hungry little stomachs are very grateful for that, too. You're a great woman, what you've done in such a short period of time. I really want to wish you the best of luck. I know this thing is going to grow much, much, much bigger. And thank you so much for the time you took out today to explain everything to our listeners. And thank you for the wonderful and beautiful thing that you've done, Taja.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on the show, and, you know, I look forward to speaking to you again. I do want to give a wonderful shout-out to Joyce Lipinski-Lewis. She was with me from the very beginning as well, and Michael Travis, and Teresa Moore, my godmother. There are so many more people. Eric Parrish. I mean, listen, when I started it, like you said, it was with nothing, right. And it was really with a handful of people that were right beside me in the trenches and have stayed there. So just want to give them all a shout-out as well.
Right.
And Gail Carr.
Yeah.
I can keep going, but I'm not going to do that to you.
That's okay. I don't mind. Thanks so much for the time. Taja Savelle of Urban Farming. That's urbanfarming.org. Thanks so much. And thank you for making so many hungry people happy.
Thank you. I appreciate it.